Talking today with Rick Noriega, candidate for U.S. Senate. And first question I ask everybody, Rick, you know, you were in a pretty safe House seat in the Texas House, you know, looking possibly at the Democrats maybe regaining a majority in 2008, and you decided to run for U.S. Senate instead. Why did you do that?
Well, we're just at a critical time in our history as a state and as a nation. And, you know, I felt it incumbent upon I don't want Ricky to have to join the military to go fight in Iraq. And if you would listen to Mr. McCain or a lot of other people or the current administration and Mr. Cornyn, who supports the administration, we're on the wrong course. And so I think it's just incumbent upon all of us as Texans to step up to change the course that we're on. And so I'm doing what I know how to do.
So let's talk about Iraq. You know, what should we be doing at this time? What do you want the U.S. Senate to do?
Well, first and foremost, you got to have a change in the commander-in-chief. Commander-in-chief sets the policy. And so we've got to have a change in the commander-in-chief. If you heard the president's remarks last week, he essentially said, all is well, aren't we doing great, the economy's fine, you know, everything's rosy. And, you know, I'm stepping up to say that, you know, the emperor has no clothes. So first and foremost, commander-in-chief. Second is the Senate needs to have enough votes to be able to get through the cloture aspect of putting timelines and forcing the administration to change policy. Texas is critically important that we have that vote. But also, you know, when it comes to, again, those timelines within the budget process, having enough votes to be able to move our country in the right direction is important.
So, do you advocate an immediate withdrawal from Iraq, or
well, immediate kind of timeline? It's funny. I mean, you know, clearly, if you could wave a magic wand and we could disengage, that would be the ideal. That's not reality. Reality is you can probably move two combat brigades a month out of theater. Had this administration not been so stubborn and listen to the recommendations from the Hamilton-Baker report, we would have already been moving troops out this past spring based on the inability of the Iraqi parliament to move on certain benchmarks that we said that we were going to observe, but then we didn't. So the reality is, as quickly and as safely as possible is the answer. I don't believe it is in our interest as a nation to continue to have an occupying force in Iraq. We would have more influence from the balcony versus on the dance floor in terms of bringing stability to the region by being able to make interventions and have political exercise political pressure to help bring stability. Not to sugarcoat anything, there will be a spike in violence as warring factions struggle to see, you know, who's going to be the dominant ruler there in Iraq. Nonetheless, the immediate neighboring countries recognize that they have to have a stable Iraq. The Saudis understand that. The Turks understand that. Iran, unfortunately, because of our misguided efforts, are probably the power and the prominent country in the region now. But bottom line is that, you know, as a United States Senator from Texas, I have to think of not just the global foreign policy effects of our country's intervention, but, you know, the men and women from Texas that actually serve and their families. And we need to disengage as quickly and as safely as possible.
Is the goal to get all troops out, or should there be some kind of residual force, or what?
I don't know the answer to that right now, not having all the necessary data to look at. I'll tell you this, What worries me is that we are spending an awful lot of money on concrete and steel and some major bases and runways that are situated right over the oil fields of Iraq. I think that's why people like Senator McCain and so forth talk about we're going to be there a long, long time. There's work currently on an agreement with Iraqis for base situations. I mean, strategically, you probably wouldn't need it because we have a presence in Turkey and obviously in Afghanistan as well. So strategically, and some degree, some still in Saudi Arabia, but in the Sinai Peninsula, I think, again, it is a function of our dependence on fossil fuel. And until we, you know, all of these things are interconnected. Until we become less dependent on fossil fuel, that is always going to be a flashpoint for the use of our military to try to satisfy our need as a nation for the use of fossil fuel. So I would hope that wouldn't be the case, but I don't see how this country then just does a turnkey and hands the keys over to someone, these enormous facilities and bases without. We've got to have a way, you know, this war was always supposed to have been paid for by Iraqi oil, and to date that has not been the case. So I would hope we would disengage and not occupy those bases.
Okay. You mentioned Afghanistan. You, of course, spent a year there with the National Guard back in 2005. What is your assessment of the current military and political situation in Afghanistan?
Well, you know, the 9/11 report talked about the three countries that were a haven for Islamic fundamentalism or radicalism that would harbor those kinds of movements, and they were Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia. Iraq was never in the equation. And so when this administration, with John Cornyn's help, went in that direction, completely took our eye off the ball to be able to, we missed the opportunity to take out the command and control element of Al-Qaeda. They are stronger now. They're more lethal than before 9/11 because of our actions. We still need to bring to justice those that were responsible for slamming the planes into the Twin Towers and killing all those families and Americans. To the degree that we can do that jointly with, you know, in a United Nations front, we need to do that. It's important that we don't just unilaterally do it, that we do that with the assistance of other countries, and because the command and control of Osama bin Laden and that whole ideology is a threat to the whole nation. I mean, to the whole world, rather, whether it's Western Europe or even Russia, or so it's a threat around the world, and it is a war between ideology of what they perceive the world to be versus modern democracies, and so. But the way that you fight that war is obviously not just the command and control element, but it has to be fought by moderate Muslim nations. It has to be fought with the war of ideas and how we envision the world to be. That means that you've got to have modernization of education of women. You got to have a secular education system to the degree that you can. You gotta push Muslim or support moderate Muslim countries and efforts around the world, because Muslims are not of that fringe bent. That is not who they are. And so So therefore, it's got to be a collective effort in fighting that war, or that ideological war. And it is a component of, one, the immediate nemesis of that command and control element, but it's also a global war on the whole idea or vision of what this world is going to be. We've got to support Pakistan and their, you know, obviously their free elections, and that's transparent. You know, there's such a distrust, especially with this administration, and which Cornyn has been an avid supporter, carte blanche, and not supporting the state of Texas, and making sure that we have follow through. I enjoyed the line by Charlie Wilson at the end of the movie, Wilson's, you know, Charlie's War, where he said, we messed up the end game. You know, we've got to stay committed to the degree that it helps make people successful. Afghanistan's threat is not its neighbors. Afghanistan's threat is internal. And that, again, is a threat of, you know, the threat. The enemies are ignorance, poverty, are those kinds of, those are the enemies. And so to the degree that they are recognizing development and education and so forth, that's what wins. And that's what defeats the idea of what Osama bin Laden and his like promote. That's a long answer.
All right. As we speak, the Senate is going to be taking up a bill regarding FISA again that may or may not allow for retroactive immunity to the telecoms for warrantless wiretapping. What's your position on this?
I'm against retroactive immunity. When I was, bottom line is the American people understand, and they are very understanding of the events of 9/11 and even immediately following 9/11 to some degree, what the actions that need to be taken to keep us all safe. Americans are very understanding of that. What the American people will not are not as forgiving about is that if there were violations of the law prior to 9/11, if there were clear usurping the process for whatever purposes, it violates our Constitution. And so there's no excuses for that piece. You know, we can't be looking the other way in that instance. And so I think that any kind of retroactive immunity is wrong.
Do you support the actions of Senator Dodd in trying to filibuster a bill that doesn't meet that requirement?
Well, I'm glad Senator Dodd is standing up for his convictions and what he believes, and that's a violation of the Constitution.
Okay. You just got back from a tour of South Texas, which, of course, is kind of a hotbed of controversy right now with the proposed border fence. The government, the federal government, has sued some landowners along the border for access to their land for surveying. What did you see down in South Texas, and what is the effect of a border wall going to be?
Well, the effect is, I think, it's going to further divide us as a state and as a country. I think it's just an incredible, gross power grab. You think about it. Without due process, the federal government taking people's private property. That's what we're having occur here in the state of Texas. And I tell you what, Texans are not going to stand for it. That's something that Texans understand, regardless if you're in the Panhandle in East Texas, all over this state. One of the things that we've always stood for is independence. And what they do understand is, okay, today your land, tomorrow mine. So I think that is going to really get folks fired up politically there. Cornyn, of course, has spoken in favor of the federal government's actions. we recognize that the wall itself is something that won't work. It's been stated again and again. It is, as Mr. Cornyn has said, a 18th century solution to a 21st century problem. And so then we were going to spend these billions of dollars on something that won't work to pacify some, you know, extreme political notion when we really have, you know, a couple of things going on. One is we have a broken immigration policy here in this country. We recognize that. And at the same time, we've always recognized the need for border security since the 1840s, the treaty of the Hidalgo Treaty and the war with Mexico, and we had outposts from El Paso all the way to Brownsville for border security. This country has always recognized the need for border security. But the way you do that is through technology, virtual fence, because we have a God-given barrier, which is a river, and with additional law enforcement. That's that piece. You know, I'm probably the only candidate or office holder who's actually commanded troops and worked with Border Patrol on the border and fighting against the narcotraficantes or people that human smuggle or money launder and all those kinds of things. So, you know, I have that perspective to share. At the same time, we know that our immigration policy is broken. We have a need for labor, both professional and unprofessional. That need is going to have to be addressed, but we need to know who they are, where they are, and what they're doing as a function of labor in this country. Secondly, we know that we have illegal employers, and we need to have a system that goes after illegal employers that would exploit people. We need to have a process that people come out of the shadows. Mr. Cornyn has always endorsed a touchback provision to a country of original origin. I don't know if that he proposes to put them on boxcars or put them on buses or what his notion is of, that people would go to their native country and then in hopes in 2 years of coming back. That means they would leave family, friends, businesses, homes, and I don't think that represents a Texas value. And in fact, what it will do, because of the inability of people to, as it is now, through the backlog of either passports or the bridges and so forth, would just further push people into the shadows, in my view. You know, Democrats are for strong border security and for immigration reform. Myself especially, as a United States Senator from Texas. But what I'm not convinced of is whether or not Mr. Cornyn and the like, his supporters, are really wanting to fix the problem or address the problem. Or if they just want to have both the status quo, which allows for cheap labor to drive down wages, and at the same time, be able to use the issue as a political piñata, just to get folks emotionally charged up about it, to evoke fear and intolerance, which I think is immoral.
Okay. The Senate also recently debated a stimulus package for the economy. What is your opinion of the action they took?
Well, I don't think it went far enough. I think that there's still some work to do. I'm hopeful that while it's on the Senate side, that there'll be some additions. It'll go to conference, and they'll be able to work something out that actually does immediately help working families. The unemployment insurance piece of it that was left out, I believe, needs to be extended from a factual standpoint. For every dollar in unemployment insurance benefits that are there, we get back into the economy about $1.75. So it's a really a good motivator in the economy and getting dollars churning. I think that's an important piece. I don't see on the food stamp side as well if that why that should be prohibitive. It was on the House side, the extension of that program. But there's still more work to be done, and so I'm hopeful. I think that Speaker Pelosi did a good job of advancing the ball, of getting a product out so that it could be worked on and you know, improved. And so, you know, I appreciate her statesmanlike approach, and because the need is there, and putting politics aside and get the ball rolling, because people are hurting here in Texas. People this next year, as we move into this recession, are going to be losing their houses and the like. And so with the instability in the Middle East, are spending $12 billion a month on a credit card that will wind up owing to the Chinese and other countries. We've got to do something to help people out there that are working families.
All right. You are in a contested primary for the nomination. When people go to the polls on March 4th, why should they vote for you to be the Democratic candidate for Senate?
Well, I think that we need to finally send somebody to Washington, D.C. that has walked the talk, whether we're talking about border security, whether we're talking about working in a bipartisan way to get things done for the people of the state of Texas, whether we're talking about having an understanding of the military and the current occupation of Iraq and what that is doing to Texas families, and whether it's talking about just having stood up time and again for Texas families, for our values and our principles. I think that experience, proven leadership, and competence matter. And I think that regardless of Republicans or independents or Democrats, that people are ready for that, for leadership. Not about leadership that is deliberately attempts to divide us as Texans and as Americans for the purposes of maintaining political power, which I believe Mr. Cornyn represents. But leadership that is about how we bring people together, not just for the common good, but to lead people in a direction of realizing what our full potential and capabilities are as Texans and as Americans. And that's what I intend to present myself to the voters and say, we can do better.
Okay. Rick Noriega, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you, Charles, as always.